Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Narcan's just got to be so available that you don't have to sit and wait until the people with it show up.
Advocates demand that Anchorage police officers carry the overdose-reversing Narcan. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 5th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Indigenous leaders respond after parents sue over a school's use of tribal values.
Literally, one of them is holding each other up. I think if you go down the values, it's hard to take issues with any of them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
As opioid deaths climb rapidly in Alaska, the medication Narcan has been touted as a life-saving tool to combat overdoses. While many police departments across the state use Narcan, the Anchorage Police Department, the state's largest law enforcement agency, does not. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
Sandy Snodgrass pops her trunk. It's full of Narcan kits.
There's Narcan kits in here, instructions how to use Narcan, some other information.
She starts heading them out to people in front of the Anchorage Police Headquarters on Tuesday afternoon. Snodgrass became an advocate for Narcan after her son Bruce died of fentanyl poisoning in Anchorage last October. She says she's shocked that Anchorage Police don't carry the overdose-reversing drug.
Since I learned that APD does not carry Narcan, I've been rolling up on APD officers any chance I can get and asking them if they'd like a Narcan kit, and they all want Narcan kits. I've yet to speak to an officer that does not.
Now, Snodgrass is outside of APD's downtown headquarters demanding that Anchorage police start carrying Narcan. Over 4 hours, she says, she also gave 25 Narcan kits to officers as they walked in and out of the building.
One of whom commented, "Why are you here?" I said, "We're here to ask APD why they're not carrying Narcan kits." And she said, "That's a good question."
Snodgrass's call for change comes as Alaska opioid-related deaths skyrocket, with recent numbers from the state showing a 70% increase from 2020 to 2021. Roughly 3 in every 4 opioid overdose deaths in the state were related to the synthetic opioid fentanyl.
For the average person, 2 milligrams of fentanyl will kill you.
Michael Troster is executive director of Alaska's High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas Unit, or HIDA. The organization is part of a federal program that coordinates with local, state, and federal agencies to reduce drug trafficking. Troster says Narcan is a major tool in fighting fentanyl overdoses.
It's an opiate antagonist. So unless you have opiates in your system, the way it was described to me, it would be like shooting water mist up your nose.
He says a majority of law enforcement agencies across the country carry and administer Narcan.
Alaska is pretty much the same as the rest of the country. Most of them have it. But there are places everywhere that don't.
Alaska State Troopers use it, as well as the Wasilla Police Department. Recently, the state has conducted trainings with village public safety officers to administer Narcan as well. One of those places that doesn't is the Anchorage Police Department. APD officials declined several interview requests, but in an email, they said that while the police department doesn't use Narcan, the fire department, which houses the city's medics and mobile crisis team, does. APD spokeswoman Renee Oystead wrote, quote, "The most important component of saving a life is establishing airflow, which is accomplished through CPR. We live in an area where both APD and AFD response times are quick. Should APD arrive on scene first, administering CPR is the proper response until AFD arrives to assess the situation," end quote. APD officials didn't specify if the department plans on giving Narcan to officers. Recently, a nonprofit called Project Hope sent hundreds of kits to the department, only for them to be returned, which is how Snodgrass got them.
So the interesting thing about the Narcan kits that I brought today, they're the Narcan kits 100 of the 600 Narcan kits that were returned from APD. I have them today.
Back at APD headquarters, roughly 20 people joined Snodgrass in her protest, waving signs with messages like, "Reverse an overdose, save a life," and "Why won't APD carry Narcan?" One of the demonstrators was Anthony Brodsky, a former day supervisor at the now-closed Sullivan Arena Mass Homeless Shelter. He says he's had to administer Narcan before at work. Brodsky says he also used Narcan in his personal life when his wife Rebecca had an overdose.
My wife, one of them, you know, back before we got clean, you know, if it hadn't been for Narcan, we'd have lost her, you know, but we had it and she's still here because of it.
While APD says their response times are quick, Snodgrass says sometimes they aren't quick enough.
I know last week of an incident that occurred on Lake Otis and Tudor, a man had gone unconscious, unresponsive behind the wheel of his car. APD again did CPR on the man. Fire department arrived 10 minutes later with Narcan. The man passed.
Troster with the drug trafficking unit says ideally everywhere would have Narcan available, similar to the prevalence of automatic external defibrillators.
So we wrap our hands around the scale of the problem, you know, the treatment of the victims. It's Narcan's just got to be so available that you don't have to sit and wait until the people with it show up.
As for Snodgrass, she says she's going to continue advocating for Narcan use so other people don't meet the same fate as her son, Bruce.
I know that Bruce would not want anyone else to die the way that he did. So my end goal is that APD provide life-saving Narcan to people that may die, including themselves.
In addition to the advocacy in Anchorage, a bill meant to raise national awareness of the growing dangers of fentanyl titled Bruce's Law has been brought forth by U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And we have an update to that story. At a meeting a day after the downtown rally, Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl said change may be coming. He said the department will reconsider its policy of officers not carrying Narcan. He says he'll meet with a medical advisor and the city's legal department, but cited hurdles of training, cost, and safety concerns. The mining company Kinross is proceeding with the Moncho Mine project in Tetlin. The company released a press release saying it has completed a project feasibility study for the $250 million open-pit gold mine. The project includes a controversial plan to truck ore to Kinross's existing Fort Knox mine north of Fairbanks for processing. Kinross Alaska External Affairs Director Anna Atchison says Kinross is working on permits for the mine, which will be built on Tetlin Native Village land and is in the meantime readying housing for mine crews.
Refurbishment of an old hotel down in Tok with the purpose of having that as a camp location.
The mine is predicted to create 400 to 600 jobs, and Atchison says Kinross is committed to hiring locally and has had good turnout at job fairs. According to the Kinross release, the company expects to start production from two open pits at Moncho in the second half of 2024 and excavate ore yielding 640,000 ounces of gold over 4.5 years. The movement of double ore hauling tractor trailers on the Alaska, Richardson, and Steese highways, as well as some Fairbanks roads, has created concern about safety, air quality, noise, and infrastructure damage. But without a railroad, Atchison says trucking is the only viable option, and the company's plan has not changed.
2 to 4 trucks per hour going each way hasn't changed. That's still our solid estimate along the 240-mile corridor between Tetlin and Fort Knox.
An advisory committee formed by the State Department of Transportation that includes stakeholders from along the trucking route, agency and industry group representatives will work with an independent DOT-hired contractor to analyze the Kinross trucking plan. There will be no turkeys, chickens, geese, or ducks on display at the Alaska State Fair in Palmer this year. Fair organizers announced yesterday that they're banning the birds due to concerns about spreading bird flu. Health officials say the bird flu is highly contagious and lethal among birds, while the risk to human health from the virus is very low. Alaska confirmed its first bird flu case in late April and has since reported about 100 additional infections in birds across the state, including chickens in the Mat-Su, bald eagles in the Aleutians, geese in Anchorage, and ravens on the North Slope. The Alaska State Fair will still have a baby chick exhibit this year, organizers say, because the disease does not impact chicks in the egg. The fair runs from August 19th to September 5th. Bird flu concerns also prompted organizers of the Tanana Valley State Fair in Interior Alaska to ban poultry this year. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, tourists find a time capsule from 2006 near Juneau's Mendenhall Glacier.
It was quite soggy when I got it, but we were luckily, it's in pretty good condition, so you're able to still read everything.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
An Anchorage man convicted in a fatal shooting in 2004 has had his conviction thrown out because a judge improperly denied his request to represent himself at trial. That's according to an Alaska Court of Appeals opinion published today that reverses Stephen Hinshaw's conviction for manslaughter. Hinshaw, 38, appears to have already served the 11-year sentence he received. According to court documents, Hinshaw had allegedly fired a revolver into a car with two people inside who'd threatened his friend. The shots hit one of them in the neck, killing her, the court documents say. A grand jury indicted Hinshaw for first-degree murder. Then, according to the appeals court opinion, Hinshaw had a series of court-appointed attorneys who kept withdrawing and replacing each other for various reasons. He was unhappy with the attorney he had as they were headed toward trial, and Hinshaw sought to represent himself, the opinion says. But the judge denied Hinshaw's request, the case went to trial, and while he was acquitted on the murder charge, Hinshaw was convicted of the lesser-included charge of manslaughter. Hinshaw filed a petition for post-conviction relief in 2011. In its review, the appeals court found that Hinshaw had shown the judge he was competent enough to represent himself and could present his case in a coherent way without being disruptive, and the opinion says he should have been allowed to represent himself. The appeals court's ruling sends Hinshaw's case back to the trial court, but because Hinshaw was acquitted on the murder charge, he can only be tried again for manslaughter, the opinion says. A Department of Law spokesperson said today that state attorneys were discussing whether to retry Hinshaw. In 2016, a mid-air collision between two small commercial airplanes near Russian Mission resulted in the death of both pilots and all passengers. Following the crash, one of the companies and the widow of the pilot pursued a lawsuit against the other company. As KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports, the case was settled late last month.
Last month, Hägglunds Aviation, better known as Raven, paid out $2.5 million in a lawsuit filed against them. This closes a chapter in the now 6-year-old story of pilot Zach Babbitt, who was killed in a mid-air collision involving two small commercial airplanes. In 2016, Babbitt was piloting a Piper Super Cub for Bethel-based Renfro's Alaskan Adventures. He and a Renfro's guide were flying from Bethel to a hunting camp, cruising at over 1,000 feet. That's when a Cessna Caravan took off from Russian Mission and essentially ascended into Babbitt's plane. Both planes tumbled to the ground and all 7 people on board, including both pilots, were killed. Following the crash, Zach Babbitt's employer Renfro's and spouse Carrie Pride filed the lawsuit against Hägglunds.
Really, the motivation was to show that the other party was at fault and to make them push to improve their safety.
The lawsuit against Hägglunds alleges that it was completely at fault. Attorneys for Pride hired aviation experts who concluded that the pilot of the Cessna Caravan should have had a clear view of Babbitt's Super Cub while taking off. Pride says as a pilot of nearly 2 decades, her husband was known throughout the state for his high safety standards.
My husband flew for Hägglunds for a little while and he left because of safety and concerns.
Settlements don't point to fault, but Pride says she sees the high dollar amount as an admission of the carrier's wrongdoing, and there was no countersuit filed.
It gives me relief because I know Zach was not at fault in this, and I feel like I did my job for Zach and his good name, and
and for Renfro's.
But Pride thinks airline safety in Alaska still has a long way to go. An investigation by Unalaska Public Radio Station KUCB and ProPublica last year revealed that Alaska is the least safe state for small airline travel. KUCB reported that almost half of the nation's small plane crashes are in Alaska. And there were 5 midair collisions in the 5 years following Zach Babbitt's plane crash. The report attributed the crashes largely to inexperienced pilots, a lack of support while flying in remote areas, and poor infrastructure at rural airports. Pride said the lawsuit was agonizing and lasted as much as 2 extra years due to the pandemic. She's glad this chapter of her life is behind her. She's looking forward to continuing her work with Babbitt's estate. He was a prolific wildland painter who took much of his inspiration from scenes he witnessed in Alaska. She said because of that, she's set up a scholarship in his name for art students in Babbitt's 2 beloved home states of Alaska and Montana. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Indigenous leaders are voicing frustration after 2 parents sued Ketchikan School District over the use of tribal values within a local school. And the meaning of one particular value is prompting disagreement. KRBD's Reagan Miller has the story.
When Richard Peterson looks at the list of 14 traditional tribal values, he doesn't see anything exclusive to one religion. As the president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, the tribe that created the list in 2004, he believes the opposite.
They're inclusive and about, you know, literally one of them is holding each other up. I think if you go down the values, it's hard to take issues with any of them. I would imagine if they do, it may be the one around creator, but I think that's a personal one to anybody.
Peterson was talking about one of the 14 values on the list, reverence for our creator. He says Southeast Alaska tribes don't have a common religion, and the value means something different to everyone.
You know, I know what it means for me, and, you know, again, make it personal to yourself. If you are atheist, make it about your parents or ignore it. I think there's room for values that we don't always necessarily fully adopt.
It's at the center of the lawsuit filed by Justin Brees and Rebecca King. King and Brees argue that the value is clearly a religious statement, and that makes it inappropriate for a public school. The parents are suing Ketchikan School District and Ketchikan Charter School for posting the values in hallways and common areas and for using them as part of a behavioral reward program. They argue it's a violation of the First Amendment and Alaska's state constitution.
But we don't think that the school district should be speaking to any type of spiritual or religious type value. Those type of values are things that are best passed down in a family where your parents teach the students about their religious and spiritual beliefs. And that's not the place of government.
Brees says he doesn't object to the value being included in lessons about Alaska Native culture. But he says posting the values in classrooms and hallways strips out necessary context.
On the list, and that list is posted everywhere, and you're pulling items off the list, the student reads the whole list. So it's hard for me to see how a student could make the distinction between whether this is a value that I need to follow and is endorsed by the school district and is actual creationism or not.
Peterson says he's open to a conversation about the meaning of creator, but he doesn't believe that a lawsuit is the right way to do it. He says he doesn't understand why the parents take issue with the values being posted in school.
It's hard not to feel like this might have some bearings in racism. I don't like to leap to that conclusion, but, you know, it's hard to find when you go down this list of values where we can't all, no matter what our cultural background, find a way to connect to those.
The lawsuit was filed in Ketchikan Superior Court July 25th and was assigned to Judge Catherine Librand. Ketchikan School District has yet to respond in court. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
A ship departed Unalaska last week to begin laying 800 miles of subsea fiber optic cable all the way to Kodiak. KUCB's Laurelyn Cruz reports.
It's a foggy morning on the northeast corner of Mackinac Island. This is the starting point for 800 miles of subsea fiber that will soon bring high-speed internet to the Aleutians. Just offshore, the CSIT Intrepid, a 377-foot cable-laying ship, has started the job. John Burnett is the construction manager for the project in Unalaska. He explains how a crew of divers is dropping the cable down into the water near the shore.
There's buoys that are suspending the fiber just above the ocean floor. And then once they have it all the way in, which they do all the way to the land right now, then they're going to go through and they're cutting those buoys off. That's going to allow that cable to come down.
This is a milestone for Alaska internet provider GCI and its AU Aleutians fiber project, which is on track to bring high-speed internet to Unalaska and Accutan by the end of this year. But getting that cable down to the right spot on the ocean floor is just one of many challenges. Jeff Dunlop is the captain of the IT Intrepid.
Planning a cable route is much like a railroad or a goat trail. You take the path of least risk and least resistance. Cables don't like going over things. They want to follow a contour.
To find the best possible route, engineers surveyed the geology and marine habitat of the ocean floor. They also met with local fishermen to make sure the cable isn't in a spot where it could get dug up by trawlers. Once the route was established, the cable had to be specifically engineered to fit the conditions of where it will sit on the ocean floor. The IT Intrepid typically lays cable at a speed of about 1 to 2.5 miles per hour. While en route to Larsen Bay on Kodiak, the ship will stop in Accutan, Sandpoint, King Cove, and Chignik Bay. It's expected to complete its voyage by early fall. Dunlop says bringing internet to these remote communities is part of a bigger picture, creating infrastructure for the globe.
The reality is that there's literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of kilometers of cable on the bottom laid by people like ourselves. It's not just a local event where small islands are being interconnected. It's the global network.
If all goes according to plan, Unalaska and Accutan will see high-speed internet by the end of this year. Service to Sandpoint and King Cove will follow by the end of 2023, and Chignik Bay and Larsen Bay in late 2024. In Unalaska, I'm Laurelyn Cruz.
A group of 28 young wood bison has made it safely to their new home along the lower Innoko River in the western interior. The yearlings are the latest group of wood bison to be transplanted from Canada to the lower Innoko region as part of a long-term state, federal, and tribal project to reestablish the animals in Alaska. State Department of Fish and Game wood bison biologist Tom Seaton says the yearlings were barged 750 miles along the Tanana, Yukon, and Innoko rivers over 4 days and then released into a large pen set up along the lower Innoko on July 24th.
Went right in, and the grass was deep. You know, it's about 4 or 5 foot tall grass there, sometimes 6 foot tall. It's pretty crazy. And they just kind of disappeared into it and started eating away. And they quickly kind of recovered and calmed down from their trip.
The pen is in an area where a herd of about 130 wood bison seeded from animals first transplanted to the area in 2015 gather for the rut. Seaton says two bulls have been hanging around the pen.
Sometimes the two bulls will be wallowing just outside the pen, and the yearlings will be wallowing just inside the pen. And wallowing is when a bison kind of lays down on the ground and rubs all around in the soil. So there's a lot of interaction going on.
Seaton says radio tracking shows that groups of wood bison cows are headed to the pen area, and when they arrive, the young bison will be set free to join them,
so that they can just become part of the herd and learn everything they need to know from those wild animals.
Seaton says young bison naturally group up with and follow adult cows. A Wyoming couple found a time capsule at Mendenhall Lake in Juneau last month. It had note cards inside written by kids dated 2006. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has the story.
Kara Willis and her husband Tyler used to spend evenings at the Mendenhall Glacier a decade ago when they worked summers in Juneau. They live in Wyoming now, but they were visiting in July and reliving old memories at the glacier. That's when they found a water bottle on the shore of the lake.
It was just floating in the water, and we're like, oh, there's garbage. You know, we get it out of the water. But then I said, there's something in it. There's something inside.
Tyler opened the bottle. Inside were 11 notes written by kids back in 2006.
And I mean, when we saw this, these children's handwriting and the date, like the year 2006.
Yeah. Over and over.
And these sweet little facts about the kids. It was so special.
Each card has a different first name and what appear to be facts about the kids or memories they have from their first 9 or so years on Earth.
Zori, Juneau, Alaska, 2006, 9 years old. Number one was getting to ski ptarmigan. Number two was, it says, got Papo toys for Christmas. And three is getting an IV in my head.
Zori Oberle is 25 years old now and lives in Salt Lake City. She says the IV in her head was a dehydration treatment she got as a small child after she was adopted from China.
I unfortunately do not remember anything about this. I had several people like message me and was like, oh, is this you? And I was like, no way, that is me.
If Oberle were to write a note in a time capsule now, she would tell her future self what to do.
Just stay like scheming for adventure and maybe, I guess, travel to China. And three, maybe like learn to surf.
The Willises handed the time capsule over to staff at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, where it's being kept. Tyler speculated that someone in the group threw the bottle onto the glacier itself, and it floated out to the lake with the meltwater.
It was quite soggy when I got it, but we were luckily, it's in pretty good condition, so you're able to still read everything.
Julia Spofford is an assistant director for the Visitor Center.
We do want to make sure there's good messaging about Leave No Trace. And while we love finding things like this at the glacier, that, you know, these moments of history, we hope to not find too many more.
Her advice for future time capsules is to bury them at home. For their part, the Willises are glad to have found it. They're both teachers with a 9-year-old of their own. They say they feel invested. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early and Tegan Hanlon in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Olivia Eberts in Bethel, Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Laura Lynn Cruz in Unalaska, and Yvonne Crumry in Juneau. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Nastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.